If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This week's episode of A Cast of Kings is brought to you by Hover.com. Hover is the best way to buy and manage domain names. When you have a great idea, you want to secure a great domain name for it. You want something catchy and memorable to represent your project. Hover gives you exactly what you need to find the perfect domain for your idea. Joanna, this week's Hover.com promo code is hover.com/hardhome.
How timely and accurate.
Super timely, because Hard Home was such a huge part in Season 5, Episode 9 of the show. Not at all, actually. You totally missed it by a week, Joanna. So why did you choose hover.com/hardhome for this week? Like, well, why did you think that this would be appropriate?
Because I knew that they spent a really long time filming Hard Home, so I actually thought it might be an entire episode-long battle. And
you were basically right.
Well, it was
like half an episode.
Yeah. And, you know, Blackwater and the battle at Castle Black, those were episode 9. So, like, the big battle episodes sometimes are episode 9. So that was my guess without, you know, because we picked these codes way early before we knew what was going on.
All right. Well, good effort. fortunately, our listeners can still benefit from your misdeeds here by going to hover.com/hardhome to get 10% off their first order. Thanks to Hover for sponsoring us this season. Really appreciate it. Let's get to the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome to A Cast of Kings, an unofficial podcast about the HBO original series Game of Thrones. I'm David Chen, and I've never read any of the books in George R.R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire.
I'm Joanna Robinson. I've read every book in George R.R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire.
And welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen. If you're just tuning into the podcast for the first time, what we do here on A Cast of Kings is we will discuss everything through this week's episode of Game of Thrones, Season 5, Episode 9, The Dance of Dragons. We will not spoil anything from future week's episodes, and that includes the next time on preview or the books. And you can find more of our episodes at GameOfThronesPodcast.com. You can also email us at acastofkings@gmail.com. That's acastofkings@gmail.com. Also find us on Facebook and Twitter at acastofkings. Bunch of updates we have to mention at the top of the show, Joanna.
Yes.
Firstly, what we realized this week was that it's not even enough that we don't make any errors on the podcast. Uh-huh. It's that if we leave out a salient or ironic fact, we will get hammered via Twitter and email and so on. People reminding us that, hey, did you know that this was true and that you didn't mention it on the podcast? And in fact, it sounds like you got the brunt of this, right, Joanna? You got dozens of tweets correcting, quote unquote, correcting something that wasn't even wrong, right?
Do you want to say what that is?
No, I'm going to extend the suspense for as long as possible. But basically, yes. So last week, I mentioned that I saw a film called San Andreas, which also had an annoying child named Ollie in it. And of course, hundreds of our listeners felt the need to point out to us that, in fact, the character of Ollie in San Andreas is played by the same actor who plays Rickon in Game of Thrones. So it's like a convergence of two of your favorite characters in one actor. that happened, you know, with San Andreas and Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, thank you all for pointing that out. I actually think I did know that fact. Sorry for not making sure I made that clear on the last episode of the podcast.
You know, something, you know, anyone who writes on the internet and makes a list, like say you make a top 10 list or something, and then someone will be like, can't believe you forgot. And you're like, I didn't forget it. I just actively chose not, this is my 10 that I picked. And those used to bother, those comments used to bother me so much. And then my boyfriend said something about like, he thinks it's more about people trying to add to the conversation, like be part of the conversation, than it is like trying to school you. And in my experience, it's probably about 50-50. Like 50% of people just want to be like, hey, did you notice this? This is cool. I wanted to share this with you. And then right. The other 50% want to point out that you're wrong. So,
right.
You know, the internet, it's a mixed bag.
You don't say. You don't say. Well, speaking of things being a mixed bag, last week I put a call out to all of our listeners. And said, hey, guys, there are two new subreddits, or one new subreddit and one subreddit that I guess was already there. Reddit.com/OllieRules and Reddit.com/FuckOllie. Right? These were the two subreddits. And I said, join these subreddits and make your allegiance known as to what your opinion is on the Ollie situation. Are you a fan of the character of Ollie in Game of Thrones, or are you not? And I will say that the Ollie Rules subreddit has grown to a very healthy number. I believe it's around, 180, I want to say?
Oh, wow.
186 subscribers.
And how's the other one doing?
Well, the Fuck Ollie subreddit It hasn't grown so much as I would say it has metastasized. to over 1,500 subscribers. That was
If you
sad.
Haven't been to the Fuck Ollie subreddit in a while, first of all, I think I said this last week, but I have no ill will towards this actual child.
the actual actor who plays Ollie, you mean?
Yeah, that kid seems cool, and I don't wish any harm on him. But the Fuck Ollie subreddit has gotten like an update since... It's got like a shiny new banner, and it's just the happening place to be, guys. So yeah. You might want to check it out.
I will say it is probably loaded with spoilers, so be careful.
I think both are.
Yeah, both are. So just be careful. If you are not a book reader, probably best to just avoid these subreddits entirely. But yeah, and I should also say to get to it, you got to go to reddit.com/r/fuckOllie or reddit.com/r/OllieRules. Best comment from this week's Fuck Ollie subreddit. I wish Stannis was Ollie's dad. I will say many of these posts are very funny.
They're so funny.
When they're not being spoilery, they are incredibly amusing.
Yeah.
But yes, the growth of those subreddits was quite something to behold and made me ponder, Joanna, you know, what we could accomplish from a subreddit perspective if we used our powers for good. As opposed to just, you know.
Oh, that's interesting. I believe I am using my powers for good.
As opposed to just pitting people in this pointless battle against each other. Okay. Speaking of spoilers, Joanna, something else we got to go over. And that is that some people accused you of dropping some spoilers on last week's episode of the podcast. Did they
not? That is true. That is true. So I gave the background on the character of the Night's King, which is actually introduced pretty early in the books. But he's a character of legend and hasn't shown up in the books at all and is in the show but not in the books yet. And a couple listeners pointed out that they felt like maybe the HBO series is building up to this reveal. And maybe I shouldn't have mentioned it. And I'm willing to consider that as a possibility. But I will also say that as we get closer, you know, as the line sort of blurs between what's going on in the show, it's no longer a simple fact of this hasn't happened yet.
Right.
You know, it's a lot trickier. I'm not trying to, like, you know, defend myself, but kind of, I guess.
It sounds just, like you're defending yourself, but that's okay. But that's okay.
I will just say that it's a little bit more complicated now, and I really am trying to do my best to fill in background information, which is my role, and also keep you guys sort of pure. So for anyone who is upset about the Night's King thing, I'm sorry. For all the people who are excited and thought it was really cool information, I'm glad. And hopefully I didn't ruin some cool, awesome reveal on the show, but rather enhanced your experience.
Well, let me just say right off the bat here that I saw some of these accusations being lobbed against you. And my reaction was – I was incensed. Not at you, Joanna, but at the reactions. Because you people – you listeners, you don't know how good you have it with Joanna.
No.
She is so good. And in fact, I think someone pointed out this week, if you go back in time and you listen to earlier episodes of this podcast, there are, I don't know, literally dozens of opportunities that Joanna could have tipped her hand and ruined something and didn't. And she's been incredibly skillful at avoiding spoilers. And she's not perfect, but I would say 95% of the time, I would say she does a really good job of not spoiling. Which, by the way, we should also point out, in the wild, wild west of Game of Thrones podcasts is apparently not an easy thing to do. Because the number one complaint I see for other Game of Thrones podcasts, and sometimes ours, is, man, these guys spoil everything. So all I'm saying is, guys, give thanks for Joanna. Because, she may make a stumble once or twice. Not even sure if this can even qualify as that, but overall, you should be grateful for what she's been able to do in terms of taking us through this show spoiler-free. So just
thank you, thank you for saying that. I do hear what people are saying. I really like the setup of our show. I like that we try to keep things spoiler-free. It's going to be a little blurrier going forward, just right, because we're going to talk about it in this episode. The show is now spoiling the books, so right, it's just more complicated than it used to be.
And there are times when there's backstory in the books that is never on the show, like you right, just never hear about it ever on the show, and so then is describing that backstory spoiling something? There right, is no right answer to that. We just don't know yeah, what the answer is, so please be patient. Speaking of patience, we are recording this podcast episode quite late on a Tuesday. And of course, every time we're late, we get tons of people demanding the podcast. And so as a result, there will be no clips inserted into the podcast tonight because people have made clear that they want the episode faster than they want the clips. So,
and thank you for your patience, guys. Yeah.
Yes. Thanks for your patience. But I did include something to tie people over, did I not, Joanna?
Oh, you did. Yes. An added treat.
I at Joanna's direction, I filmed myself reacting to the last episode of Game of Thrones. And so you can find that video at facebook.com/acastofkings. That's facebook.com/acastofkings. And actually, this is the second time I've done this. Both videos have done incredibly well. This one has been viewed over 4,400 times as of right now. So,
wow.
Your direction is to film myself for the finale as well, right?
Yes.
I shall consider it. I shall consider it. but maybe there's something listeners can do for me.
But okay, first, before you say that, if you do, you have to have your lady friend in the background because she made the video just that extra bit of better.
She was the audience surrogate when I was talking about my love for Ollie and John.
That, but also when she was like, son of a harpy. I mean,
that was very good.
It was really great.
That was very good. So watch that video at facebook.com/acastofkings. Let's get into the show, Joanna. We've done a lot of preamble here. Let's get into this episode of Game of Thrones. So Season 5, Episode 9, written by Benioff and Weiss and directed by David Nutter, who's a super talented director. He's directed several episodes of Game of Thrones in the past. I actually know him all the way back from his days directing The X-Files. And by know him, I mean know of his work. I don't actually know him personally. So The Dance of Dragons. We start with Braavos, I believe, right? With Arya and this entire plotline of the Thin Man, correct?
Right.
And so in this episode, the Thin Man is not dead. I thought that was a little confusing. Any non-spoiler explanation you could give me for that? I guess is this supposed to be like a lengthy poison that she's using, or
she hasn't poisoned him yet? I think she's like she just gave him vinegar on his oyster last week.
You
thought that was poison, and she was supposed to poison him in this episode, but she got distracted.
I see. So, okay, was I stupid for thinking that was poison last week, or was that kind of ambiguous?
No, when she first put the vinegar on, I thought it might be poison vinegar. but I think she had a conversation with Jack and like back at the House of Black and White, where he basically gave her the direct order, the kill order. So it was like, this is like a scouting mission. And then she went back and he was basically like, you should probably kill him.
I think the way it was edited last week was really confusing then.
It was a little confusing.
Because they were jumping back and forth in time. So I thought that the putting the vinegar on, like that act happened after the conversation with Jacken.
Right.
So that is my defense for why I misunderstood that. But anyway, she's about to kill this dude. And then Maren Trant arrives at the docks with Mace Tyrell, who I was actually quite pleased to see is still alive.
Yes.
I thought he would for sure be dead by the time he arrived.
Right.
So Mace is apparently a really good singer. Things happen. Mace visits the bank, and then Maren Trant goes into a brothel. And they do everything they can to make Mace Tyrell as despicable of a human being as possible.
Maren Trant, yes.
I'm sorry. Sorry, Maren Trant, yes.
Mace Tyrell is a goddamn delight.
He is
charming. The highlight of this episode was him singing for me, and also Mark Gatiss as Tycho Nestaris, his reaction to being like, I can't believe I have to suck up to this guy.
Yeah.
That was maybe my favorite part of the whole episode, to be honest with you. Yeah. Okay, the awful Maren Trant.
Correct. So he goes in, and in what I found was a somewhat oddly staged scene, Arya barges into this brothel with oysters. And then observes Maren Trant choosing a young girl, from a lineup of girls. And then she is shooed away before anything can happen. So what do we want to point out about this whole sequence? What do we feel is worth highlighting? I think the one thing that I will point out is that, Benioff and Weiss in the post-game, breakdown said that Arya's recognition of Maren Trant and then pursuing him is an indication she is not ready to become a woman with no faces or what have you, because she's still holding on to this element of her past and this desire for revenge.
Right. And he's on her list for killing, in theory, killing Cyril Farrell, her fencing instructor. That's a good point. I once again question whether this brothel scene was necessary to, didn't we already know that Maren Trant was the worst, right?
Well, not only that, he doesn't share too, right? That was a big deal. Not sharing? Come on, guys.
What's that about,
Maren? I'm being sarcastic, by the way.
I feel like we already knew that Maren Trant was the worst. Arya already hated Maren Trant. So I'm not sure why this added non-book pedophilia angle was necessary. But hey, this isn't in the books, so I don't know what's going to happen. So I'm just going to lay my bets that Arya is going to like hard candy this guy, basically.
Nice. I like how that's a verb now, but yeah.
Yeah. So that's my prediction.
For those who don't know, Joanna's referring to an indie film starring, Ellen Page.
And Patrick Wilson.
Wilson, yeah. Basically, Ellen Page is a pedophile victim and then turns the tables on the perpetrator. So, yes, that's what it seems like it's building up to.
I'm just worried that, if Maisie Williams or even if – I don't know if she's going to, try on a face or something like this. I have no idea. I really don't know what's going to happen. So this is just questioning. If Maisie Williams has to pose as an underage prostitute, I don't know that I'm ready for that. We'll see. We'll see what happens.
Well, I guess – I don't know. There's that scene where Maren Trant says something along the lines of, make sure you have a fresh one
for
me.
Yeah. When he's like, make sure you have a fresh one tomorrow. And like a little light bulb went off over Arya's head. And I'm just worried that that's her plan to like.
I guess I repeated that just to point out what a horrifying line that is. Just
yeah.
As a what, like all that implies is terrible.
Yep.
From my perspective.
Yeah.
But then she has a scene with Jack and where she lies to him. Right. And he gives her this concerned look.
Right.
Am I right about this? Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, you know, he's shown himself apparently very good at detecting lies, so probably seeing right through her entire plan. Any other thoughts on this whole sequence?
They did have a whole brothel scene without any nudity in it, so that was interesting. But yeah.
Also, apparently, in the world of Westeros, it is well known that oysters are an aphrodisiac. I think that's true in our reality too, right?
Yeah.
Is that
yeah.
generally?
Yes.
Which I personally, let me just say, I don't get that. I don't understand that as a concept. Because oysters, I feel like, are really heavy. Do you know?
Oh, we're about to get like a million emails talking about the like physiology of what oysters do to your body. I hope you're ready for
it. Look forward to it. But yeah, I guess I'm just saying, like, when I eat oysters, I don't get, you know, into an amorous mood is my point.
Okay.
I don't know about you, but that's just my personal reaction. All right. Moving on. Then there is a scene at the wall where all the wildlings and John, they've finally made it to the wall. And there's this moment of tension where is Alistair going to open the wall for all these wildlings, right?
Right, right.
And there's this moment of tension where you don't know what's going to happen. And then Alistair opens the gates. And I love this moment on John's face of just complete and utter relief because he would have been screwed otherwise. They're leading people through the Castle Black. I guess the wildlings are going south. Ollie and Alistair are really disapproving of this. Alistair has this line, "You have a good heart, Jon Snow. It'll get us all killed." And yeah, dude, Ollie's got an Ollie, if you know what I'm saying. He obviously still disapproves, expressing it in a way that is obviously very much in keeping with his character. And very incredibly satisfying, I have to say. So
I want to say a couple things. First of all, we did see that Tormund like basically has taken stewardship of Carsey, who's the wildling mother who died last episode. He had her daughters sort of next to him. So like at least we know, you know, in that one shot, okay, like someone's looking out for these girls who lost their mother. One the giant made it as well. My co-host on the Storm of Spoilers was really concerned because last we saw one, he was just like wading out into the sea with no real plan because he can't like get on any of those ships. So I'm glad to see he made it. The giant's there.
What is implied there? That the water just never got deeper than he was?
Did he like skirt the shore? Can he swim?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good question.
Big mystery.
But yeah, his point was that Tormund said, one to the sea. And it's like, that's not a plan. That's just
that's just a name and a preposition.
It's not like a plan at all. Anyway. Yeah. And John's face when he sees Ollie, he looks like a happy little puppy to see Ollie. And then Ollie just glares at him like Ollie does. And then he looked like a kicked puppy. Poor Jon Snow.
Indeed.
All right.
All
so
right.
That's reddit.com/r/fuckOllie. So.
Or reddit.com/r/OllieRules. I don't know. I feel like I'm fighting a losing battle very much like Ollie is in the show.
Oh, okay.
All right. So then we go to Dorne. And there are a few scenes. There's this very tense scene. One of those scenes where everything said is passive aggressive. Amazing shot with Jaime entering the throne room. Whatever. The throne lounge. Whatever it is that they're in. I feel like they really wanted to make the most of that location. So they had this like great shot from underneath Jaime.
Yeah, that was in the season 5 trailer.
Yes, yes, great yeah. shot in the trailer. Anyway, so they have this conversation, and essentially Jaime says, hey, I need to bring Marcel back. And what's his name? Doran says, you can bring her back, but under this condition, you gotta put my son on the small council, right?
I think yes.
that's correct.
Mm-hmm.
Because Oberyn was on a small council, so this dude, Tristane, will replace him.
Right.
And then Ilaria is still really pissed off that any of this is happening.
Right.
And then they let Bronn live.
Yeah.
On the condition that they can elbow him in the face.
Yeah. How are you feeling about this Dorne plot?
It seems like a colossal waste of time so far, from my perspective. it started out really promisingly, do you know?
Yeah.
And I like you know, the guy who plays Doran. I like all the actors; they're all great. But just what is going on? What is the point of
yeah.
this?
Yeah, and I'm not even sure I will say that the women who are playing the Sand Snakes are great.
Hmm.
I don't know what's going on with the Sand Snakes and why they are falling so flat on the screen, but I think it's a combination of the writing and I don't know, just the performance is also not working for me.
Hmm.
But they've just been like nothing characters to me this season. Ilaria's like reversal seems so sudden. Like the motivation seems real to me, you know, because basically Prince Doran is like, you know, you're a mother, you've got kids, don't make me kill you, basically. You know, and she's like, oh shit,
as you
okay.
do yeah.
okay. But then she's like making nice with Jaime like so suddenly, and I don't know, it's just her whole arc. And I like Indira Varma, the actress, a lot, but that whole arc was really weird to me. Yeah, Dorne looked beautiful. Beautiful location shots, lovely costumes. What a colossal waste of time.
Started out great. Them arriving on the breach. You had all the ingredients of an amazing plotline.
Yeah.
But just not really sure what, you know, why we needed any of this. I mean, so far, all of this could have happened off screen. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's nothing on here that I think to myself, oh, I'm really glad we saw that because that was necessary for our understanding. So, yeah, unfortunately not a super great plot. I did think Ilaria had this great line about how the rules always change about who we need to love and how that kind of mirrors our society as well.
And that's what I'm talking about is, like, in terms of performance, because I feel like the writing – I mean, that's a good line, but I feel like the writing in general for Ilaria has not been good. But I feel like Indira Varma has been, like, doing her best
right.
with a really, like, shitty plot line. So, I don't know. I liked that scene with her and Jaime, and I sort of wish we had had more of that.
I just found it particularly relevant in given that one of the co-hosts of this podcast magazine recently published Caitlyn Jenner's photo on their cover. And it's kind of kickstarted this whole conversation about gender in our society, and I thought that her line was particularly resonant given what's been going on in pop culture this week.
Yeah.
So I just love it when, you know, something on the show that like has an echo in our reality, and I thought, you know, that was a shining moment amongst a otherwise pretty. You know, from my perspective, inconsequential.
You mean like the pearl in the non-aphrodisiac oyster?
Correct. Correct. That is right. So I don't know how I'm going to make this transition, but speaking of aphrodisiacs.
Yes.
I just launched a Kickstarter project this week.
How does that make you feel? Better than a whole kilometer of oysters?
Well, the reason I bring it up is because some people think that cello music is super sexy. I know many of those people listen to this podcast. I'm really reaching here, Joanna. But seriously, I did launch Kickstarter this week. And a lot of people have asked, is it me that's playing cello in the opening of this podcast this season? And the answer is yes. So after 9 episodes, I can reveal to you, yes, that is me. But it is not recorded super well. I really want to make like a full fledged recording that sounds good in a studio and stuff like that. So one day, hopefully, I'll do that. But in the meantime, at DaveChenMusic.com, I've launched a Kickstarter where you can support my cello music. Why is any of this relevant? Because, Joanna, I used an amazing service to buy the URL.
What service is that?
That's Hover.com.
What?
I know. It's awesome. When you have a great idea.
Did you have to pay full price, or did you have some sort of promo code you could use?
I had a promo code called hover.com/hardhome. That's actually not true, because that's a lie, because I bought that URL a while ago.
Okay.
But what's not a lie is that I did use hover.com to buy it. And you can use hover.com today to buy a URL for 10% off. Go to hover.com/hardhome. That's hover.com/hardhome, the name of last week's episode. In less than 5 minutes, you can find the domain name you want and get it up and running. All you have to do is search for a few keywords, and Hover will show you the best available options across all the domain extensions out there. When I bought my domain, DaveChenMusic.com, super easy to use hover.com/hardhome, which again, I technically didn't use, but you can use it this week. And you know, if you've ever registered a domain name anywhere else, not going to say where, you know that companies make it a really unpleasant experience. Hover.com, super frictionless. Just go in, search for all the stuff you want, get free Whois privacy and wherever it's available. And it's an awesome service for getting domain names super quickly. So would highly recommend hover.com/hardhome. And they're one of our two sponsors this season, and we really appreciate all the support they've given us. And if you want to support my cello EP, go to DaveChenMusic.com. But let's thank all the other people who contributed to Cast of Kings, Joanna. Who else helped make this podcast possible this season?
I would like to personally thank Emily Ralph, Peter Shern, Andy Cito, Shivi Sharma. The lovely Sarah Carlson, Andy Shear, Daniel Steer, Andrew Needling, sounds like Liebling, and Sam Forsyth. And Sam Forsyth put how you pronounce his name in here, but I've read the Forsyth saga, so I already knew that. All right.
Patrick Sullivan, Alec Jenkins, Dan Draff, James Duvall, Martin Ayling, Zappa Johns, Ed Peterson, who submitted for the lovely and talented Vicky Peterson, his wife, and also Ivan, who loves Cast of Kings almost as much as Game of Thrones Morales. Thank you guys for your contributions as well. Now, according to Joanna, we should have reached the end of our list of Cast of Kings Kickstarter donors. But it's very possible that somewhere along the process, perhaps when I sent Joanna the list, I messed up, and people who were supposed to get their name read did not get their name read.
Or maybe the person who picked the code name Hardhome for this week's episode messed up somewhere.
Perhaps some mistake occurred. So if you were supposed to hear your name and didn't hear it read, do write in so that we can thank you on the next week's episode of A Cast of Kings. All right. So thanks to hover.com/hardhome, and thanks to all the people who donated to the Kickstarter. It's been so awesome to have like all the support of both our sponsors and also our donors. Really warms my heart. And speaking of things getting warm.
Oh, no.
Stannis and his daughter.
Yeah.
So the Stannis plotline begins with Melisandre, I guess, just kind of doing her thing. And then all of a sudden we see things getting lit on fire. Now, my first reaction was not, oh, hey, that's Ramsay. It was, hey, is Melisandre – did one of Melisandre's spells literally backfire or something along those lines?
Well, I have a quick question about fire. Did you know that the Flaming Heart is the sign of the Lord of Light and Stannis adopted for a sigil? So if you look at Stannis' stuff, it's not just the Baratheon stag. It's the Baratheon stag on top of a burning heart. Like on his clothes and stuff. Your burning heart, your warmed heart thing was more accurate than you even knew.
Mm, all right. Nice. So
I just am stalling. I don't want to get to I don't want to talk about this at all.
So I thought it was also odd that they didn't show Ramsay at all, to my knowledge, right? Did we see Ramsay's face in this episode?
No. Here's my favorite thing of what happened. One of Stannis's men, I believe, goes like, "Seems like it was the work of 20 men." Just in case you were curious if that was Ramsay and his 20, you know, commandos lighting those fires.
Yes. And fortunately, the previously on Game of Thrones also helped set that up, make that connection as well. So what I like about this episode is you really start to understand how desperate Stannis' situation is. And you see that both in terms of Dalvos' description of how desperate it is and also how Stannis is becoming progressively more disheveled as time goes on.
Yeah, they did a really good job of making the Baratheons look very, rough in the face.
Davos visits Shireen and she tells him about this book that she's reading called The Dance of Dragons.
Mm-hmm.
And anything relevant you want to highlight here?
Just if you haven't read it, George R. R. Martin wrote a novella called The Princess and the Queen, which is sort of about the Dance of Dragons, which is a Targaryen civil war. So if you want to know more about, you know, what Shireen was reading about, it's not quite the same thing, but, you know, this is basically one of the things he did rather than complete the next novel as he wrote this novella. So,
and how dare he?
How dare he have a life and live it like he wants to?
So I guess my question to Joanna is, what was kind of the purpose of this story? I think part of it is that she is trying to communicate how pointless war in general is, right? I mean, I guess that's kind of the message I got from it, is all these people fought and lots of people died, and was it worth it? Did you feel like there was any kind of purpose to this scene for the broader storyline?
Couple things. First of all, I think that they wanted to have another touching Davos Shireen scene just so that we could feel as bad as possible about what happens next. And then she also talks about the Dance of Dragons with her father. You know, just to make it really, really rough, and then just to lay the groundwork for what happens with Daenerys later. So just to talk about the Targaryens and their dragons, to sort of lay the groundwork for, you know, Targaryens and their dragons. So,
got it.
I think so. You know,
Yeah, no, that makes sense. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So, so then. They say goodbye, and you know, this brings up to the first of two scenes this episode where someone with grayscale touches someone without grayscale. And I guess, what are the rules for infection in the show? Do we know? Do you have any thoughts on that?
I believe, please do correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe you need to touch that person like where the grayscale has infected them.
Mm-hmm.
And then you might get grayscale. You might not, right? So, you know, with the Jorah stuff later, people were like, oh, does everyone did he save Daenerys just to give her grayscale? But I think he's got braces over his, like, little patch on his forearm. So I think he's protected. And then with Shireen, I believe because the grayscale
is inert now.
Yeah, exactly. Had been halted on her, that she's no longer contagious. But I don't quite know.
Well, we both definitely spent time thinking about this fictional disease.
So. I mean, if you burn someone with grayscale and then inhale the smoke, do you then have grayscale in your lungs?
Mm.
It's a good question.
Good
right?
question. Yes, definitely.
I hope so. I hope all those motherfuckers have grayscale in their lungs now.
All right. So anyway, Stannis goes in and says, hey, you ever realize how some people, they need to do what they got to do? And Shireen... That's what makes it so difficult, is Shireen is not even recalcitrant in any way. She is so obedient, which, by the way, she totally goes back on later. I mean, when they get her, they're about to execute her. I mean, you got to admit, she kind of went back on her word, Joanna, right? Okay. I guess you don't want to joke about this. That's fine.
Well, I was thinking about this, you know, me being perturbed by this scene, and I was thinking back to like the Red Wedding and how perturbed you were about sort of the Talisa stuff that happens in that scene.
Yes.
And
in my opinion, that is still the most disturbing thing I've seen on the show.
And I don't know. It's interesting. Sometimes Game of Thrones is so great, and then sometimes it does a thing, and I'm like, why am I watching this show where they burn a child alive or stab a pregnant woman in the stomach or whatever? So, no, I mean, we can – yeah. I hope those people have gray scales in their lungs. That's my joke. Your joke is that Shireen went back and promised to her father to help him.
Correct.
Yeah.
So this is not a development from the books, apparently. I heard this, right?
Well, you know, Weiss and Benioff in the post-episode video basically said when George R. R. Martin told us about this, we were shocked. So the implication there is that this will happen in the next book.
I see.
So then this is why everyone's like, oh, the show is spoiling the books. Like if they burn Shireen in the next book, everyone reading it will already know that it was going to happen because they saw it in the show.
So they haven't reached this point in the books yet.
Right.
Fascinating. So you didn't even know if they were going to burn Shireen or not.
I did. I was pretty sure they were going to burn Shireen, yeah.
Well, when you say you did, is that because you intuited it or because you heard about it somewhere else?
That shot when Selyse goes like down in the snow and she's upset.
Yeah.
That was in the season 5 trailer.
I see.
So I kind of thought they might burn Shireen.
So, in terms of how this scene is filmed, I mean, it's brutal.
Yeah.
Her cries for her father are brutal.
Yeah.
It is appropriately brutal as a scene and heartbreaking. The Selyse stuff did not work for me, I will say.
It was an interesting reversal because you would of the parents to crack, you would expect Stannis to crack. But actually
– I think it's the fact that she shows up and then she says, this is a good thing. And she shows up looking super evil from my perspective.
Yeah.
She does not look concerned, potentially regretful, cautious. She just thinks to herself, this is the right thing to do. And
I think it highlights Stannis' character. I know a lot of people – I am not as upset as some people are. I am upset, of course, as anyone would be to watch a child burn on television, right? But the whole like this is character assassination of Stannis. Like we were rooting for Stannis, right? We had sort of latched onto Stannis in this season as a potential person that we could root for because all of a sudden he was being nicer to his daughter and making funny grammar jokes and we liked him. And now he's burned a child.
Not really grammar jokes. He was just correcting people's grammar, but yes.
I don't know. Like you kind of feel like, oh, maybe Stannis would be great on the Iron Throne. Maybe I want to root for him. But, you know, from the start, right, like, Stannis conjured a smoke baby to stab his own brother. You know, from the start, his ambition has been his most defining characteristic. And his conviction that the throne is his by right and that he would be a good ruler. And that he's willing to do what it takes. And so I like the Selyse stuff only because it highlights that once Stannis has made this decision, he's made this decision. And he has the courage of his convictions. And he's like, yes, this is the necessary evil for what I need.
I think I understood what they're trying to do with the Selyse stuff. It's
right.
This idea that Selyse has not been super kind to her daughter, but then upon seeing her being burned alive, suddenly her motherly instincts overtake her and then she's overcome by emotion and must try and save her. I get that, but it just didn't.
No, or just humanity. I mean, it's not just that. It's that you have to look at that in contrast to Stannis, who actually liked his daughter.
Right.
But who is standing resolute because he's the kind of person that when
that stuff all worked for me. The Stannis stuff all worked for me. I just saying from a Selyse standpoint, they have done so much to kind of so much to assassinate that character.
Yeah.
That this kind of thing at the end to bring her back. I mean, we saw almost no signs that that would be a thing that would actually happen.
Right.
So I did not find that particularly convincing. I thought the performance was amazing, but just the way that things played out, I wasn't a huge fan of.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's Stannis this week. And so, I mean, from your perspective, Joanna, you just, it sounds like you understood what Stannis was trying to do. But is this kind of an unforgivable sin for you, and now you can't ever support Stannis again?
Yes, I would say you can't come back from burning your daughter alive. Mm. Yep.
Okay, well, that's a fairly reasonable point of view to hold, I guess.
You know... something I did want to, an allusion, a nice allusion that I did want to point out. I think I read this on, I want to say, the Wired recap. You know, Davos gives Shireen this little carved stag, and, which is the sigil of House Baratheon. And I believe she has it with her when she's dragged to the pyre, that she has the stag, like, in her hand. And, on the Wired recap, they pointed out that in the Agamemnon and Iphigenia myth, which we talked about last week, in some versions, Artemis sweeps it, you know, the goddess Artemis sweeps in and swaps Iphigenia out for a stag. So it's a, or a deer. So it's a deer that gets burnt in her place, and she rescues Iphigenia. That's in some versions. And then in some versions, Iphigenia dies.
The parallel is even stronger, you're saying.
I think it was an intentional allusion, possibly. Yeah, to that. But yeah.
Only other couple thoughts to bring up here, which is that, it is now clear why Stannis sent Davos away, right?
Yes.
You said Davos brought that up.
Yes.
Stannis didn't want Davos to be around for... Do you think Davos had any suspicion that this was going to happen?
He seemed very uneasy and reluctant to leave Shireen, I think.
Yeah.
I was 85% sure they were going to burn Shireen, and then as soon as he sent Davos away, I was like, yo, yes, they are burning Shireen. God. You know. Because Davos is the one who would have stopped it. My hope is that Davos comes back and... get some sort of revenge, but I mean that's not Game of Thrones, right? Like,
right, and also like
person you, doesn't get revenge, so.
And you don't. So do you not know what happens with Davos?
No.
So this is all uncharted territory. Fascinating. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I guess it's also worth pointing out. I should say that with regards to the motivation behind Stannis' actions, it's more important now than ever. That Melisandre is correct, right? Because if this was all for nothing, that's going to kind of suck. You know what I mean?
That was one of my favorite memes is someone took like a shot of Stannis' face and underneath it said like, this better work
this or better something work, like that. Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah. We all feel as though this had better actually work. And we don't know. I think.
Would it be a better story if it doesn't work? If he did that horrible thing. And then it doesn't work.
It kind of reminds me of this movie called The Mist, actually, if you've seen that film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm not going to say how it reminds me of that, but suffice to say, you know, whether you liked that movie will also dictate whether you like how this plotline plays out if it doesn't work.
Right.
So anyway, all right, well, let's get to the final plotline this episode, and that is at Marine.
Well, let me ask you a question.
Go.
Did the stuff – I mean, I know I watched your reaction video, so I know some things. But, like, did the stuff that happened with Shireen cast a pall over the rest of the episode for you at all? Or were you able – like, were you just able to move on?
Well, I guess I think this is kind of part of our disconnect, Joanna, with regards to our experience of this show. Is from my perspective, I have been completely inured to the horrors that this show is capable of. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
I guess I just feel as though I don't know what this show could do that could surprise me at this point. Do you know what I mean? We've virtually seen every act of human depravity shown on screen at this point. And so I guess when Shireen gets torched alive, I'm just like, oh, that was very painful and horrible. But hey, that's Game of Thrones, you know? Throner's got a throne, as they say.
Well, I'm just like, I understand why they ended with Dany flying off on her dragon. That's how I expected this episode to end, but I almost wonder if maybe I don't know, Shireen should have gone last or something. Then I could have enjoyed the Dany stuff a little bit more. But I don't know, then you end the episode on a downer. I don't know. I don't know what would have been better.
I think I actually saw this pointed out to me several times on Twitter and Facebook that they should have ended with the Shireen stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. It is a little weird, especially because both plot lines involve people getting burned alive.
Yeah, and I think you're supposed to be delighted by the dragon fire, you know. And right. So would that have been interesting if you're like cheering someone getting torched alive,
right?
And then, the Daenerys stuff, and then you like switch over and you watch Shireen die, and then it cuts to credits. And we've talked about how they can do really, really chilling cut to credit moments. So like, you know, Shireen burning, and then them cutting to credits could have been. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. That's just a question.
I think one reason to end it the way they did – here's another factor to consider is length of time of the storyline, right? So I think Meereen was probably the longest storyline this week in terms of screen time. And inherently, I think an episode works better if you end with the plotline that is the longest, because otherwise the final sequence just feels kind of like an afterthought.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Versus you know, now there's time for this to build up to something and then have a spectacular finish.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. So Meereen, the fighting pit's open. There's this lengthy conversation between Hisdar and Tyrion and Dany, and about isn't cruelty always necessary, blah, blah, blah. What did you get out of this conversation?
Hisdar's comment, what great thing has ever been accomplished without killing or cruelty, felt very like a meta commentary on the Shireen stuff. Like, you know, these are the stakes of the show. You know, the reason that people love this one of the reasons people love the show so much is that the stakes are so high, and, you know, your Oberyns and your Ned Starks and your Shireens will die. And that's what makes, you know, it's such a compelling show for so many people. So, the thing I want to say about Hisdar, this is not a book spoiler because we don't know any of this in the books, but some people have been asking me, and I don't know the answer, honestly, but some people have been asking me, is Hisdar the leader of the Sons of the Harpy?
This week seems to indicate no.
I don't know. Someone was like, he didn't seem like he got stabbed very hard. But he did show up late, and he was like, just making sure everything is in order, right? Hisdar showed up late and was like, just making sure everything's in order, which is suspicious to me. So I'm not letting him off the hook of being behind all of this yet, despite that stabbing situation.
despite the fact that he got impaled.
Okay.
This does remind me of a scene in Breaking Bad. Spoilers for Breaking Bad coming up. But there was a scene in Breaking Bad where one of the major villains gets his face blown off.
Yeah.
Right? In probably one of the best ever shots in television history. And listening to Vince Gilligan describe that on the Breaking Bad Insider podcast, he was saying how the reason they had to show his face getting blown off is if you just see the explosion, there will always be some doubt in the viewer's mind as to whether he survived that explosion. And he was saying, you know, Vince Gilligan, super nice guy. He was saying, you know, and that's good that the viewer wants that character to go on living, you know, and they'll do all kinds of mental gymnastics to make that character go on living. But he wanted to remove all doubt that character's dead.
People are still pretending that maybe Shireen is still alive because
you don't see her.
Yeah, so maybe, I don't know.
Maybe Ned made it out too.
Oh, Ned's definitely still alive.
He's just hiding out until
he was in that hood on the boat in Hardhome. there is a whole like if you don't see the body, you're gonna suspect that they're trying to pull one over on you. The Hisdar thing is probably a crackpot theory to suspect him still of being behind it all when he got stabbed. But I don't know. They threw a lot of suspicion on him. So
we were asking last week, what is Jorah's long game? And this is also You also haven't read about what's going on here, right? Am I correct in that? Or was the section in the books but without Tyrion?
No. Well, I mean, Tyrion's in the pit. He's actually in the pits. And Danny, like, spares him. He's, like, a circus performer. They cut this whole circus plot, which is great. But he's a circus performer in the pits, and Danny basically is like, how will we not have these boars impale these dwarves that are performing? And his star's like, oh, we love impaling dwarves. And she's like, how about not? And so they don't. So she saves Tyrion's life without ever meeting him, without knowing that it's him.
I see. So this section is in the books then, basically.
The fighting pits are. The circumstances are different.
Gotcha.
And yeah, so Jorah coming back. I mean, the reason the show, I believe, had Jorah make this weird decision to go back again is so that there was someone fighting in the pits that we could root for. That makes the dramatic tension all the more interesting, right? If it were just a bunch of anonymous gladiators, then it's not as interesting as when you're watching, say, Russell Crowe or whatever fight for his life in the pits. So,
right.
Yeah.
But
so
I guess that feels to me as though you're saying the reason Jorah needed to do this is because the script told him to.
I think so. Right. I think that's why Littlefinger left Winterfell, because the script told him to do it.
Right.
You know?
But maybe Jorah's whole plan all along was he knew that Dany would be in danger, and by winning the fighting pits, he'd be in a position to save her?
Well, yeah. I mean, you could make that argument that he just wanted to be close to her to protect her.
That's a long – that is a very – he is making a lot of assumptions in that thing, like that she's going to be attacked at that very moment. So,
or just, you know, any excuse to be close to her, any excuse to defend her as much as possible. That spear throwing part was pretty great, right?
Yes. It was
because,
incredible.
Yeah. Yeah.
And again, reveals that Dany has the worst security in the history of Queens. I mean, we've really come a long way from when she got this army of the Unsullied, which seemed almost impenetrable, to now she's getting attacked on a weekly basis.
Now it seems like she has like 15 Unsullied left, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know if like Hisdar, if he is behind these attacks, let's say, if he paid off, you know, her security, and that's how a Son of the Harpy got through.
Feels like really bad security.
It feels like an inside job is what it feels like.
But okay. But before we talk more about that, shall we just say that overall, I would say that the execution of this scene is really impressive. I mean, the special effects for the Colosseum elements looked, about as good as Gladiator, let's say. Probably Gladiator was a little better because their budget was 10 times more, at least. I will say, Dany riding off on a dragon, some of those effects were pretty rough.
Mm-hmm.
People were invoking Neverending Story, a movie that was made decades ago. And yeah.
It looked 100% Falcor.
I would agree that they looked about as good as Neverending Story.
Yeah. If she had fist pumped, like Bastion does at the end of Neverending Story, I wouldn't have been as surprised.
But overall, I think the execution of the scene is pretty impressive. The scale of it is effectively conveyed. There's this incredible shot where she claps and then the camera pans over and you see thousands of people cheering, and I was overall pretty impressed with it. I mean, what were your thoughts, Joanna?
I think it just suffers in comparison to Hard Home, because I just think they did that so impeccably. And with this, you know, Weiss and Benioff said in the post episode section that they had no idea how they were going to do this scene on, you know, in a TV show. And I don't blame them. They're like, oh, okay, we have to make a big arena and a huge dragon flies in and then someone hops on the dragon's back and flies off. Okay. I don't envy them that task.
They pointed out that would be an incredibly challenging scene for a film to pull
right.
off.
Yeah.
Right? For let alone one episode of a 10-episode season.
You know, so, I feel like in another show, we would have just seen like stunned reaction faces from Tyrion and then like a shadow flying out, you know, like.
No, forget about another show. In Game of Thrones season one, you just cut to after the Colosseum fight and then Tyrion describing what happened. That is what would have happened.
Yeah.
But anyway, overall, very impressive, particularly the way the camera moved and kind of some of the compositions. Like at the end, when the camera pans over and you see all four of them there, kind of in perfect formation, observing what happened. But yeah, there's a scene where, you know, Danny's under attack, and it looks pretty spectacular. I mean, it looks like they're in an actual arena for real. It probably wasn't that large in reality, but...
They were in an arena.
Right.
I've seen, like, the effect shots. Like, there's green screen up around the rim, and they definitely, like, filled in the crowd with CG work, but they're in an actual, like, pit. Yeah.
And spoilers for Toy Story 3, but there's this whole Toy Story 3 moment at the end of this episode where Danny grabs Missandei's hand.
Yeah.
And it reminded me of the scene at the end of Toy Story 3 where all the toys grab each other's hands because they know they're about to be incinerated.
Yeah.
And she knows she's about to die. And she closed her eyes. And for a moment, I actually thought that this was like a telepathic communication with the dragon. Because if I were her, that's what I would have been doing. I would have been trying to telepathically communicate with my dragons.
And I think that's what a lot of people's interpretation was. And I think Weiss and Benny have sort of fueled that a bit because I believe they said something about the connection between dragon riders and their dragons.
Interesting, because I thought that that moment was about her preparing for death. Or actually, after watching the post-game show, I thought that was about her preparing for her death versus trying
maybe.
Just that she's preparing to die, that this might be her last moment. And then the dragon shows up.
In the but it sort of seemed like the dragon showed up, I don't know what, because it sensed she was in peril. Like, why do you think Drogon showed up at that moment?
Right. No, I agree that it's because of this connection between dragons and their dragon riders, but I'm saying I don't think her thought at that moment was, Drogon, come save me.
Okay.
That was my initial reaction. But
and I don't know what exactly is the case there. In the books, it's like pure coincidence. Like, Drogon comes to the pits because he smells the blood and hears the cheers and, you know, torches a boar and eats, you know, and like, and then he gets it. And then Hisdar orders people to attack him. So there isn't a Sons of the Harpy coup. You know, Dany isn't in trouble. He just shows up because of blood and noise. And then she sees him getting attacked and injured, and so she hops on his back to save him. She's like, let's fly away so that you don't get attacked anymore. The way they changed it for the TV show definitely made it very dynamic, but it also kind of seems like Daenerys hopped on his back to save him, but also to save her own ass.
Right.
And left her friends behind, which...
Not cool, Danny.
Not cool at all.
Not cool.
Yeah.
I also thought one thing that was kind of not...
Also, Drogon looked smaller to me in this scene than he has looked like when we saw him in Valyria.
I thought the scene when Drogon first showed up was spectacular. Just when he arrives and he's right in front of Dany and kind of roars and starts setting people on fire.
Mm-hmm.
That stuff looked amazing from my perspective. Like, the CG I thought was excellent. Yeah, I thought the last shot of all four of them was great, and Tyrion just kind of beholding what's going on is an incredible moment. I mean, all of them just being stunned at what they have just witnessed, I thought was incredible. So, but I do think one thing I didn't like about this scene was when they're surrounded, and I think what they were trying to convey was that, oh, hey, they're surrounded, and the Sons of the Harpy are kind of gaining on, they're kind of like cutting down these people, and Danny's about to die. And I thought the way that it was edited and shot just felt a little bit weird to me in terms of what the momentum of that scene was.
A lot of people have been saying that it invoked that Saturday Night Live. I think it's a Saturday Night Live ninja sketch. Anyway, basically, that the Sons of Harpy were just attacking like one at a time,
right?
And like, in actuality, there was no way that formation, you know, because like, if you watch again, like, you know, Tyrion kills someone to sort of save Missandei, but once he's down in the pits, he's just sort of like, fuck, what do I do?
There's not really 50 guys.
Yeah, I mean, they could just not really doing anything. So basically they've got Jorah, Dario, you know, Missandei, Dany, and Tyrion are doing nothing. You've got so Jorah and Dario, and then, like, you know, the handful of Unsullied, and then there's all these people around them. Like, they should have been toast. You know,
if all those people had just thrown their spears,
yeah,
They'd be dead.
They'd be dead.
So that was a little bit weak, but whatever. I mean, these are just minor nits amongst what was overall a very incredible sequence, in my opinion. But yeah, what about you? Did you find that this had an impact, or were you still shell-shocked from the whole Shireen stuff?
I hope it wasn't just the Shireen stuff that sort of had an impact on me. I think just things that rely very heavily on CG, I have a hard time appreciating. That's a flaw in me.
I wouldn't say that's a flaw, but it's more of a preference.
It's my preference.
Yeah.
And so that's, I think, why I just loved Hard Home so much, because they relied, you know, other than like 1-1, and you know, there was plenty of CG in that, but
it felt more obvious to you in this episode.
Yeah, I just felt the gravity. You know, there was that great, I'm sure most people saw it, there's that great crack.com article sort of about that. I'm sorry, I can't remember the title of it. Came out like about a month ago, I'd say. And it
six,
was sort of,
6 reasons modern movie CGI looks surprisingly crappy.
Great. Yes. And what it really drove home for me was sort of this idea of weight, which I should have known before. But, you know, just I felt the weight of the bodies at Hard Home, and I didn't feel the weight of this dragon, you know. So, yeah, so that's my preference. So they were probably never going to make that look like something I was really excited to see. But I applaud them for how much they did with that impossible task, which I think it is.
Fair enough. It sounds like I was much more impressed than you with this episode, which is okay. Which is okay. It's often the opposite. So, anyway.
Well, I think when it comes to these kind of, like, because you like the Battle of Castle Black a lot more than I did. So I think when it comes to these really spectacle heavy, I mean, Hard Home is a weird exception, and Blackwater as well. But I think oftentimes when it comes to spectacle heavy things, it's not what I connect to. And, yeah, I guess that comes down to just preference. Yeah.
Fair enough. So, overall thoughts on this episode?
I'm excited to see what happens. I'm excited and nervous for the finale. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, we are very close to off book entirely. So,
wow.
Get excited, guys.
Yeah. I guess Hard Home was very consequential as an episode. This episode was very consequential and had some spectacular set pieces. I'm curious. The last few seasons, episode 10 has typically been a huge come down from those. So I'm wondering if that's going to be the case. It sounds like, based on your hints to me, that's not the case, in which case they'll have delivered 3 episodes in a row that are spectacular.
Boom. Yes.
But we'll find out. So, yeah. In the meantime, Joanna, where can people find more of your work on the internet?
You can find me on VanityFair.com. You can hear me talking about finale spoiler speculation on the Storm of Spoilers podcast. Or you can follow me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This.
And find my Kickstarter for my first cello EP at DaveChenMusic.com. Would really appreciate your support. You can get my first EP for less than the price of most Starbucks coffees. So hope you will consider contributing. And tune in next week to our season finale review of Game of Thrones. Thanks for listening. We'll see you guys later.